This is an AMI podcast.
Hey guys, welcome along to another episode of Double Tap. It's Thursday, it's the 21st of March 2024. Coming up today, ahead of Microsoft's Surface event, we talk about the state of Windows in 2024. Ooh.
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Mine could do with a clean, I'll tell you that. Sean Preece, how are you?
Windows never needs cleaning. They are always perfect, shiny, and gleaming. I love Windows. Hello, Stephen. How are you?
Is that why you've reset your computer like six times in the last, hour?
Oh, here we go. Okay, bringing it on early. Yeah. Okay. Well, I like everything to be running smoothly and professionally in my setup, Stephen Scott.
Also, you got a Mac?
Hence Windows. I do have a Mac in my cupboard here. I just haven't used it yet.
Do you know what's funny? I haven't reset my Mac. I think I said this the other day. I haven't reset this Mac in so long.
Yeah.
Windows, it feels like every couple of weeks you have to kind of rebuild the whole thing from scratch because it's all failed.
How dare you? You are so wrong. That used to be the case, I will give you, but no, not at all. I very rarely reset Windows, but it was a case of I tidied up the studio / shed and I wanted a fresh OS as well. Just, you know, just made me feel better. It was basically...
You put some new curtains and reset your Windows PC.
Yes, it's exactly what it is. It's so easy to do now. How do you even reset a Mac, Stephen Scott?
It's actually a lot easier than it used to be. Yeah. I remember the days when you used to have... You had to have the CDs. In fact, it used to be worse on PCs as well. You used to have the original OEM CD get, remember?
It was terrible.
And then you had... And what made me laugh was you had to somehow get the Ethernet driver installed, which sometimes meant going to another computer. Yes, I remember once having to go to a library to get a computer that I could download the driver onto a USB stick.
Yes.
Or a floppy disk in the old days, and then bring that across to the computer, install that driver so that I could get onto the internet to continue installing the updates.
I miss those days.
Because it couldn't connect to the internet without it.
Plug and play and all that, universal plug and play. It just made everything just too easy. That's what I say.
Windows 10 really, that came out. I mean, I started Windows 7, to an extent, but yes. Windows 10 was really when it all kind of kicked off. And I remember the first time being able to plug something into a PC and instantly recognize it. Wow.
It was so
amazing.
Strange. Yeah, it was good.
You know, you would still get the CD. Do you remember those little mini CDs you used to get?
Yeah, that's right. In a little envelope.
Tiny. Yeah, that's right. And you would get those, and that would contain the driver. And you'd be like, don't need that, because my computer just figured it out. And it's crashed. Oh, well. Anyway, over on the Mac side, it just plugs and plays and everything works.
Yeah, okay. That's what you want to believe.
100% all the time. Never fail. Anyway, look, we are going to get a little bit into the Windows. Not Windows versus Mac. That's not really what we're talking about today. But ahead of the Surface event, which is happening today, and we will, of course, be talking about more tomorrow. I mean, we know what's kind of going to be discussed here, new hardware. But I guess the big question is, it's a Surface event. I mean, they're going to talk about new hardware. But the question is, what will that hardware be? Because in previous years, it was, you know, okay, so maybe a better screen or maybe a new design or maybe, you know, faster processor. But of course, in the age of AI, the processing is really what we're looking at now. We're looking at what the processors will be, what kind of graphics will be in these devices, because that is what is going to power onboard AI. So that's
going
to enable...
Don't you find that weird now that it's all about... The graphics card, that's powering AI. I mean, how did that happen? NVIDIA, the biggest graphics card manufacturer out there. I mean, they've just gone, what, $2 trillion or something, or the $1 trillion thing. They've just, and that's purely from sales because of AI. The power of the graphics card is powering AI. It still blows my mind.
It is amazing, isn't it, how things have changed in what feels like a, you know, very short space of time.
Yep.
Very short space of time. There's a whole conversation you could have just around NVIDIA. I've been listening to some interesting shows and podcasts on that topic recently. Just sort of looking at how things have changed, how things have moved along, and, you know, what's going on over at NVIDIA. And, you know, the reality is that for AI to function the way that we would all maybe want it to function, it's not going to be enough to have server farms. Even having server farms every inch of our country and our world, it's not going to be enough. And that's why it has to be on board as well. So there has to be onboard processing, you know, to be able to carry out some of these tasks so that you don't have to go off to a server farm that's then taken away the resource from something else. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the Surface event kind of picks up on that. And that is definitely, we had the software conversation earlier in the year. There's going to be even more about this from a hardware perspective at the Surface event today. So we will bring you all the latest on that in the next episode. But today we're going to focus in on Windows itself, because I have been talking a lot about this mass exodus, or what feels like a mass exodus.
Fake news.
Not sure it actually is. Yeah, I don't think it is a mass exodus. But it just feels like more people are talking about the Mac these days. And I want to dig into why. What's going on with Windows? What's changing with Windows? And for that reason, we're bringing back returning champion, Lord Robin Christofferson. Dr. Rob. He will be with us a bit later to talk all about his experiences on Windows, because he's recently gone the other way. He's gone Mac to Windows, although he was always Windows, really. He was just using it on a Mac. So yes. Now he's all in on Windows, and it was kind of down to his workplace that made that decision for him. How's he getting on, and how's he experiencing things like Narrator, even Copilot, and all of that? So we'll get into that with Robin a bit later. But to kick this discussion off, I thought it might be interesting to hear from Marco. iMac Man, as we know him, Marco in Germany, who got in touch with us to tell us his thoughts following our conversation about this, why people seem to be switching to Mac. And here is what Marco had to say.
Hello, Stephen. Hello, Sean. Hello, Laura. Hello, Mr. F. And all Double Tappers, this is Marco from Germany, and I'm responding to the question why the Mac seems to have gained some popularity over the last couple of months, or why I specifically am switching or have switched back to it full time. There are a couple of reasons, actually. One, as Stephen also said, I love the Apple ecosystem, the integration with Continuity, Messages, and now that there's also a very usable WhatsApp app on the Mac, it makes stuff very, very convenient. Previously, only the Windows desktop app, the UWP app, was really good, and the WhatsApp web on the Mac was still the web interface that wasn't really usable. So that's one reason. And all the apps, like I use Alfred as the Spotlight's replacement, and all the productivity that it brings with it, and the new update that's coming out, the 5.5 version, is really exciting as well. I've already talked about the audio interface stuff that's so convenient, and it's just, you know, the overall stability. I know VoiceOver has its moments or its bugs, but ever since the Apple Silicon Macs came out, things have so much improved, in my opinion, that it is a totally different beast from the Intel days. So that's definitely something that got me re-excited about the Mac, so to speak. Second, on the other hand, I've had so many problems with Windows PCs. You know, I had an AMD desktop that constantly would blue screen as soon as you put some pressure on it. And I could never figure out why. I think I reinstalled Windows 10 or Windows 11 on that device 3 or 4 times. I ran extensive hardware tests on it and it didn't falter. But as soon as I had everything set up the way I thought it would need to be, things started acting up again. And another PC that I had, an Intel NUC, N-U-C or NUC, I don't know how you pronounce it in English, it also wrecked itself to pieces after like a year of running Windows, and it's, you know, didn't stop spinning the fan and all that. And frankly, also the constant changes that Microsoft is putting into Windows 11 are really off-putting to me. And obviously, there's not that tight integration with all the rest of my ecosystem, which is Apple. I mean, there are ways to integrate with Contacts and a bit with Calendar, but it's quite a hassle. And iCloud Drive for Windows? Nah, no, not really. And the third reason is a personal one, and that has to do with my recent early retirement. I worked in the Windows environment for all my professional career. First, I worked at Freedom Scientific. I was instrumental in bringing Braille to JAWS and bringing many features in early versions of JAWS to fruition. And, you know, I know the intricacies of JAWS in and out. And even though JAWS has changed over the years, many of the things that I worked on and that I used or used to teach others, I was responsible for, you know, teaching all the dealer network in Europe how to script and stuff like that. That's really still largely the same. And that also meant that I know a lot of the workings of Windows and Windows apps and so forth. That also translated to when I started using NVDA more. And later I worked on Firefox, the Firefox web browser. And its primary target is Windows, so I was there in the Windows environment for the most part. And that also meant that I know the intricacies in and out, because now I was helping to implement the accessibility APIs from the other side so that screen readers could better consume it. And because Windows was the primary platform, basically, everything I do on Windows nowadays reminds me of the work that made me sick in the end and that led to my early retirement. And even though I did cling to it after I got sick and, you know, worked towards retirement, I really felt that it stressed me out and I needed to let go. I really needed to let go of the environment that I had been working in all my professional life, basically. And that's when I, you know, realized, okay, I don't need to be, you know, fully involved in Office and the Windows screen reading experience anymore. I don't need to do that because I am no longer working. I can basically do what's good for me and I can switch to the Mac, be in the ecosystem that I am most comfortable in because it is the least that reminds me of the work that I left behind. Even though I worked on Firefox for the Mac in my last year of active work, but that's only a small percentage of what I did. So it doesn't faze me as much as all the Windows stuff did. And that's when I realized, okay, getting a new Mac, getting the new iMac, and being productive for what I need to do or what I want to do in my spare time, like doing audio stuff, doing Reaper, doing all kinds of fun stuff, basically, I can do on the Mac. I want to do on the Mac, and it has the means to do that. And that's why I switched full-time to the Mac and basically removed the last Windows PC from my desk a couple of months ago. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thank you so much for that, Marco. You know, so much food for thought in there. And you know, no one's suggesting for a second, I know you're not, you know, Windows makes you sick. That's not the idea. But I do think that it's interesting how we associate things in our life with, you know, like, I mean, you could hear a song on the radio and it just takes you to a negative place or a positive place. You know, everything in our environment, a smell, you know, lots of things can have an impact. And it's interesting that you've attached, essentially using Windows in that case, to that, to a negative experience for you because of your time at work. And I do get that. And I think it'd be the same. I could almost imagine someone who's worked in the creative industry for a long time getting sick of the Mac and then going home and saying, please, let me have a Windows machine I can look at. Just something different, something that takes me away from that world, because you do associate. I think that's a really interesting perspective.
Yeah, and it's something I never really thought of. But, I mean, we can argue the pros and cons of the various OSs, right? And you can, absolutely. But that third point you bring up, Marco, the emotional relationship with tech, it is very interesting. And I think it's very true as well. You could even argue the same thing with iOS and Android, right? Android, perfectly usable, perfectly accessible, but still there's a feeling about it that I don't feel comfortable. And that's because I started and felt comfortable with the iPhone. there's no, it's an emotional thing. It's a feeling rather than any technical aspect to it. And I think, yeah, that's a very interesting point.
I would imagine, and I know people have done it, so it's not impossible, but I do think there's probably a more of a challenge for blind people to make the move from iPhone in particular to Android, and maybe the other way as well. Because I think there's always that game of, well, but I can just do this, or why can't I do that? And you really have got to, it's the same with Windows and Mac. You have to put the time in to accept the differences. It's not that it's bad or it's worse. It's not the case at all, you know. It's funny, right, because we were talking yesterday about Google Gemini, and I was saying to you, I'm going to go and check this out. I want to see what it's like.
Yeah.
And the experience on the Gemini website, gemini.google.com, is so much better because the accessibility is there. The whole thing is accessible. It's almost the same layout of a website as you get with chat.openai.com. It's very similar, but there's so many unlabeled buttons on that website. Whereas when you go to gemini.google.com, it's a similar interface, but everything's accessible. And it's like, oh, this is lovely.
Yes.
In comparison. So, you know, I have to say, you know, just following up on that yesterday, I kind of feel I'm probably going to move away from OpenAI and just use Gemini. I thought the results were good as well. I mean, it's a little bit, you know, some. I think using it for web searches is challenging today. I asked it a question about my wife and I thinking about getting a new sofa. So I said, you know, I live in this area. What's around me that I can go to? Where can I go to look at sofas? And it came back with lots of ideas. It got about 2 out of 3 correct. One of them didn't exist. And I thought, That's interesting, right? How did it come up with that out of nowhere? I mean, this is Google, right? They're the search people.
Is this a case of it didn't exist or it no longer exists? Because I still get that in map apps. You know, this so-and-so shop is here, but actually it closed down 6 months or a year ago.
You're right. I should be clear on that. Yeah, it did exist as a store, but just not in that particular location. Now, that doesn't mean it didn't exist. That's true. It may well have been there at one time. But, you know, like anything else, you're always going to check that information out. I think that's the problem with AI at the moment. Whatever answer it gives you, you're always going off and double checking it. Maybe that's not a bad thing, actually. Maybe they should just leave it at that, actually. Because if it forces people to check the information instead of just taking it as gospel, that's maybe not a bad thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, to your point, Marco, I think, you know, lots of interesting points about Windows and Mac, and I'll be interested to see what people have got to say on this. We are going to continue that discussion on Windows in just a moment. And I kind of wanted to have that chat today with Robin because I feel we've talked so much about the Mac. And, you know, that's because I'm using it more. But I think that it's, I'm using it primarily for everything. That's all I use now.
Yeah.
I've pretty much gone all in on the Mac, which was never really the intention. I was always quite happy with two machines. But now I'm kind of feeling, you know what, if I can just do it all in the one, it's a lot easier for me. And especially when you're traveling, you just want to take one machine with you. Just one. You know, I don't want to take two laptops with me everywhere I go. That's two laptops, Stephen. It's just not great.
I don't know. I don't know about that because sometimes when you go over to Windows, for example, you say, "Oh, this is such a nice experience."
Well, it is,
and then you go back.
But it can do say 60% of the things I want to do.
Yes.
Whereas the Mac can do about 95% of it. 100% if I put more effort into learning some of the apps.
Windows spots made a difference. Yes.
Huge difference, yeah. So thank you, Marco, getting us off and running on this topic. But I'm going to move on to Lena, who got in touch about a number of different topics.
Hello, Double Tappers. This is Lena. I am recording this message the week of CSUN, Tuesday. And if I had a Braille calendar, I'd know what day it is. I want to respond to the hearing impaired and totally blind man from Canada. There are schools that train guide dogs for dual disabilities. So I encourage you to look into that. Cece, I want you to be in charge of designing our new cane. I think we should start a GoFundMe page and get a group of these college engineer students that need a project to get working on it. And as long as we're getting the young people involved, it's time for hearing aids to have a traffic setting. We have the technology. We have multi-directional mics. We have hearing aids with many settings. There is no excuse for the hearing aid companies not to be paying attention to the needs of the deafblind community. Stephen, I will get back to you about a Braille watch. I wear one every day. Mm-hmm. The problem with Braille watches is even the good ones, which are made in Switzerland, do require a light touch. You want to keep your finger more at the edge of the watch. You don't press. You just gently touch so that you know where the hands are pointing. But there is one that's good, and I have to look up a link. It's the one I wear, but I have to get the info off the back of the watch, and it's too small for any of my technology to read for me. Speaking of technology, there's only one reason I got where I was going today. Cane and my ability to take directions from the phone. Every GPS app failed. Have a great day and keep up the great work. Love the show.
Now, just for the benefit of people who may have struggled to hear what Lena said there in the... Yeah, no, sorry. Eleanor's coming up. But what Lena said, I actually ran that through ICO, which is the transcription app. It's on iOS, but it's also on the Mac as well. And I thought I'd be interested to see if it can pick up, because I couldn't quite hear what you'd said, Lena. So I ran it through and it got it bang on, because what she said was that she only got around thanks to her cane and the ability to see the sun. Which is interesting that GPS has failed to that level.
I think she was guided by the sun. That could be just feeling it.
I mean, if it's warm enough in the sky, I suppose you probably could, yeah.
The sun is warm.
Let me just clarify.
Breaking news.
The sun is warm.
It's a great point, though, about...
Dark at night.
Stop it. Kate, just because I threw you under the bus, it's a great example of why...
I don't do passive aggression. I only do aggression.
Cane skills are so important because, you know, technology will let you down at some point. I totally agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very good. And you need a light touch, Stephen Scott. That's where you're, failing here. Yes, you need a light touch for a Braille watch instead of just smacking your whole hand down on it, trying to mash the time out of your watch.
I think that's a new Braille person or a new Braille user experience. You probably do this as well. When you're told not to do this, when you're learning Braille, they say do not sort of rub the Braille cells to try and kind of almost picture it by kind of rolling your finger round and round and round and round.
Exactly,
I do that all
I do.
The time.
Yep.
Yeah, so do I. I still do it. And I shouldn't do it because you're not supposed to do that. Yep. But I do.
Is that an S or a T? I've really got
that's
to spend
right.
some time on it. Yes.
Although it's funny though, if you just stop doing that and just do the light touch across the Braille line, you do pick it up. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You just have to really, the problem is you have to concentrate and you know.
Forget it.
We're not very good at that. No. I know, exactly. Listen, speaking of which, let's move on. thank you, Lena. Coming up next, we are going to be joined by Robin Christofferson. He is here to talk all about the wonderful world of Windows.
Hey!
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap On Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and email us feedback@doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. Call the Double Tappers now, 1-877-803-4567 or email us feedback@doubletaponair.com.
And we are talking Windows. Sean Priest, we're talking Windows.
I love Windows when I'm talking Windows.
When I'm
amazing.
Washing Windows.
All right, calm down.
Okay. I get into the old Cockney spirit every so often. Apples and pears.
George Formby was Lancashire.
George Foreman?
Cockney. Oh, forget it. I love his grill.
So do I.
No, his teeth. Okay. Wow. Weirdest start to a segment ever.
Welcome to Tangents with Sean and Stephen. So with us today to talk Windows, someone who we've wanted to get back on the show for so long, and I'm so glad to say he's back with us. Robin Christofferson's here. Lord Robin.
Hello.
Lord Dr. Robin.
I was desperately trying not to laugh then because I hadn't been introduced yet. So, hello.
Well, such a professional. Such a professional. How are you doing, Robin?
Really good. Really good. Glad to be back. See, you've tidied the place up. That's good.
Yeah, well, I have. I did all the work on it. I've got to say, he did nothing. I just want to be very clear on this. He did nothing.
I did the heavy lifting. He did the dusting. Everything's great.
Nice.
That is actually probably true. I'm that kind of guy. I do like to do a bit of dusting. I like dusting. I like things to be clean. Because do you ever do that thing when you're cleaning? Because blind people do cleaning differently. We do. We do cleaning differently because we do it by touch.
Oh, we do.
We very feel tactile. If it's clean.
As soon as I walk in that kitchen and I feel those sides, if they're even slightly crusty, that's it. It's a disgrace. And the kids always say, well, it looks clean. Oh, well, sorry.
Yeah.
We've got counters that are kind of speckly and marbly. And yeah, mm-hmm. I think they don't show up the dirt. So yeah, you can tell there's a bit of texture there. Got to take it off.
Exactly. That's how you know. Anyway,
double
we're talking
about cleaning.
Let's not talk surfaces. Let's talk. Actually, do you know what? We could talk surfaces because there's a surface event coming up. Oh, there we go. Oh. I'm applauding myself on that one. I'm giving myself that one for applause. So the surface event is happening today. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow. But I want to talk about Windows more generally because I feel, Robin, I know you catch bits of the show as you go along because you're a very busy man. But we've been talking a lot about the Mac. And that's fine, but I think we should also remember there are people out there who sadly do still use Windows. I'm only kidding, Windows
the
people.
Majority.
I'm just kidding. Yes. But yeah, lots of people are using Windows. And I was talking on the show the other day about what I feel is some kind of small exodus towards the Mac, because it feels to me anyways, if I'm seeing a lot more people than I've seen in a long time talk about the Mac as in, hey, let's try this out. Let's move to the Mac. Now, you did the opposite. You had a Mac, which you primarily used on Windows, because everyone knows the best way to use Windows is on a Mac. And you decided to just give up entirely on that, or was it your work, I think, that might have decided, your office maybe said, you've got to do this. And you got a new PC, and how's it been? How's Windows 11 been for you? Because you hadn't used Windows 11 either, had you?
I was going to say beautiful, but only when I made it look like Windows 10. So basically,
visually.
Well, that right click menu is what Sean kindly helped me put back. There's a registry key, which you can do if you want to kind of hack. If you're that way inclined, then you can make Windows 11 right click menus, you know, Shift F10. I haven't got an applications key on this lovely Mac keyboard that I'm using here.
Really? Oh, you're still using the old Mac keyboard?
Oh, yeah. Love it. Absolutely love it. Magic keyboard. Work got rid of all the Macs at work, and there were a lot of unhappy people. For me, using both the Mac and, you know, Windows in a VM, I felt like was best of both worlds. Yeah. But have I missed the Mac side? No, not at all. There's nothing that I needed to run. I wasn't needing to use like Rogue Amoeba software or anything like that. So I haven't missed anything. And like you said earlier, I used to sort of live 95% of the time in the VM anyway. So, you know, running Windows. So I'm using Windows. The keyboard still has the Alt and Windows keys switched around. So nothing's changed there really, because that's what it's been like for me in the VM for years now. Windows 11, a little bit getting used to maybe. I like the fact that when JAWS stops talking sometimes, which it does, a lot of the time actually, you know, particularly when you've had to bring up the user access control to, example, run a JAWS update, and then anything behind that user access control doesn't seem to talk with JAWS, which is a bit weird. I haven't got to the bottom of that. Bit ironic when it's a JAWS update that you're running. But when you run Narrator, I think that's probably the biggest difference between 10 and 11 is the cloud voices, the new natural voices in Narrator. Oh, they are so good. And Narrator is really quite powerful these days. I don't know if you've kind of tried to drive with it.
Oh, but, lots to dig into here. Yeah. Lots to dig into in this. Because I must admit, Narrator is it always has been the sort of number three in the list of screen readers for a lot of people, right? Because most people in work are using JAWS. At home, a lot of people have realized the power of NVDA. And I've often said that I think that Narrator in some ways has never really had the chance to get the spotlight or ever even get the sunlight on it to grow, because everyone's too busy using everything else. So you don't really hear much about Narrator. So what's your experience been of that? How have you been using it?
Really powerful. And in recent versions, they've actually mapped most of the JAWS keystrokes, well, a lot of the core JAWS keystrokes. So that has made it really comfortable. You know, if JAWS isn't working, you fire up Narrator, Control, Windows, Enter, and you can use all the same keystrokes for just normal driving of JAWS, right down to sort of, you know, insert F12 for the time or date and that sort of thing. It automatically goes into scan mode when you're in an HTML, like a web page, for example. Yeah. The keystrokes are pretty similar there as well. It just feels really mature. Yeah. I would probably also, for the European and maybe rest of the world listeners, flag Supernova as well, not North American. I don't think it really registers over there, but certainly I think a lot of people might be saying, what about Supernova? You know, which used to be HAL before it got combined with the magnification software as well. And that, particularly in Eastern Europe, where I don't think there are still many Eastern European language synthesizers that JAWS or Narrator support. So yeah, Supernova as well. But no, Narrator, definitely a mature screen reader now, definitely.
Well, okay, I will agree with you. I think the natural voices of Narrator are amazing. I love them. Yeah. Absolutely amazing. Now, why they're not available system-wide, that's another discussion. But still, absolutely fantastic. And Narrator is very, very usable now. Sometimes I forget that I'm using Narrator other than the voice. Because, as you said, the keystrokes are very similar. So you can forget. I have noticed, though, for example, if you go to a browser, open up Edge, do Control-L to jump to the address bar, you try typing as quick as you do using JAWS or NVDA, and it will get lost. It's still a little bit sluggish for me, Narrator. I need to slow down, let it go into scan mode off or scan mode on. Mm-hmm. I need to wait for it. And I still find that slightly annoying, but I totally agree with you. I mean, it is a viable option now. I think when I've set up a machine before where I haven't even bothered to install anything else for a few days. I've just been using Narrator and it's absolutely fine. It just still slows me down a little bit.
And you're probably running it on quite a beefy machine, aren't you? So it's it's not the hardware. Okay. Yeah. No, I think it's really, really good these days. Such a massive jump. And why that's not been made available in Windows 10, I don't know. I'm sure there's no technical reason. I feel like that's a differentiator between the two that they shouldn't have imposed, because this is access, you know, and loads of people don't want to go to Windows 11. They put in that artificial hardware requirement that you need that special security chip to run Windows 11. I think they've relaxed that a bit now. But there's going to be loads of low vision or blind people using Windows 10 still that are having to settle for the older version.
I wonder if there's still that website running where you just have to tick a tick box saying I'm disabled and you can get Windows 11. Do you remember that website? Yeah, well, that's right. But it's interesting you guys talking about Narrator, because I haven't noticed that issue at all. I've noticed it to be fairly swift. In fact, quite impressive, actually, in comparison to previous versions, which, you know, I think that's the truth of Narrator, is that it's a kind of a hidden secret. And, you know, you bring such interesting perspective to this, because there are many parts of the world, Robin, that just can't access anything else. And, you know, for language reasons and everything else. I'm glad you brought up Supernova. I'm not saying does anybody use it, because of course people use it. I know lots of people use it. People tell me in emails that they use it. But it doesn't seem to get the kind of cachet that everything else does. We never seem to talk about it in that broader context. And I don't know why, because it's a very powerful piece of software.
Yeah, it is. And going through specialist education, you know, if you went to a special school, chances are they were going to be using it in the UK and Europe because of the, you know, preferential pricing. So that was definitely, you know, what you'd have kind of been brought up on. But then going into a corporate environment, and you may well have been able to request and get Supernova, but a lot of IT teams just sign off certain assistive technologies, and JAWS would be the screen reader that they would have signed off. So you'd have to move over to that, you know, regardless of your preference. So yeah, I feel like JAWS, I mean, if you can move over, sorry, Dolphin, I think that there's a lot of power in doing that, because there's so many keystrokes that JAWS has. You know, if you are in any application, particularly Office or Teams or Edge, and then you do that insert W, that brings up dozens and dozens of JAWS-specific keystrokes for that application that will give you all the information that you need. And those have all been, you know, scripted, added on to make that speak super well. And those kind of efficiency savings are what you need. You know, I couldn't use Excel without half the keystrokes to kind of know what's going on at any given time monitoring different row and column headers, reading comments, etc., you know, editing the formulae and stuff. So yeah, really, really powerful. And you wouldn't get that in Supernova, for example, and certainly wouldn't get in Narrator.
And this is why I think it's so important that we talk to you about this, because you're using, let's be honest, you're, unlike Sean and I, you're actually using the computer for things other than just, you know, oh, look, I can get onto Twitter. You know, and I think that's, am I right, Sean? He's not
no,
talking
to me.
It's
called X.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
I thought he was going to say, how dare you?
He knows I'm right. He knows I'm right.
No, but you are absolutely right. You're using it more, well, as people in employment will use it, yeah, using Office apps and things like that.
Which is where JAWS comes in. No, neither have I. But that's where JAWS comes into its own, right? And I think that I'm not going to go down this route too much today, but I want to ask you just this one question, which is, in a world where you have NVDA, you've got Narrator now sort of coming up on the inside, as it were, you know, for home users who might have to pay, well, who would have to pay to use JAWS, is it worth it today? Are there enough viable options?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say no, not unless you wanted to use Office, for example. That might be a case where JAWS would help, but I mean, how expensive is JAWS, and it's an ongoing cost. So you'd really need to have those efficiency gains. You could get to all the information with NVDA, I'm sure, and the majority of the stuff would kind of speak well out of the box. And there are some cases where NVDA is actually ahead of the game. You know, you guys had that ChatGPT integration. Admittedly, you had to go and get a key. You know, you had to set up the API yourself. But, you know, that those sort of cutting edge things come from the NVDA community before they're rolled out in JAWS. So
I do think the add-on store has been a major, and I know add-ons have been around forever with NVDA, I know that, but bringing the store in, I think, just made it much more consumer friendly. You know, for me as someone who was fairly new to NVDA and felt like the add-on thing was like some exclusive community, bringing the add-on store in just brought all that in. And I think the implementation of it could do some work. But
yes,
yeah, that's the only thing, isn't it? But other than that, I think everything is good on that front, and I like it. But to be fair to Freedom Scientific, one thing I will say, and I know they would say this to us, is that if you're in North America, for example, you can get that home user license, which is much cheaper. Here in the UK, we don't have that option yet. That irritates me. But if you wait until, say, June, July time, around the Site Village time of year in the UK, that Site Village being the exhibition that takes place every year, when it gets to Birmingham every year, that's when a lot of these tech companies tend to drop their prices. And what I managed to do one year, and I think you can do this each year, is you can kind of, if you're willing to pay up front, you can get like 3 years worth of JAWS for the same prices as you would pay for it in America or Canada on the home user license. It's the same price, but the difference is they're paying for every year, a single payment per year, whereas you'd pay 3 years up front. So that's one way of doing it. It is expensive, but it's a way of getting it. So if that's another option, if you, instead of paying the full whack price, which elsewhere in the year.
Yeah, it seems to be a postcode lottery, as we would call it, where depending on where you live in the world, you know, in some countries, they actually have a country license. So the government bought a license for the whole country. Right. And in other countries, like in America, then you can get it on a kind of a, you know, lease arrangement. So yeah, it's such a shame. And, you know, if you're in employment, then there's access to work, although that's barely scratching the surface here in the UK. It's just a drop in the ocean. But so yeah, there seems to be a lot of variability. And, you know, I think you guys had a chat with Matt Ater about this, that the reason why the home license agreement isn't in other countries is the kind of variability of the local supplier.
It's up to them. Yeah, it's up to
them. And whether they fancy the idea or not. So,
and I don't know why they don't. I don't know why they don't. I do know the reason. I think it's partly because they fear that companies will opt for that license under the guise of a home user as opposed to paying the full price. But there's surely got to be some workaround for that. I don't know what that would be, but there must be some way of doing that. Anyway, that's a conversation for another day. Let's talk about Windows. Let's talk about Copilot, because everyone seems to be loving Copilot. All my sighted friends will never shut up about it. But my question is, what is Robin Christofferson thinking about Windows Copilot?
Okay, that was the keyword, Windows Copilot, because there are dozens of Copilots. So the one that sits in your taskbar and that you can do with Windows C. I love my keystrokes for you know, driving Windows. I feel like there's many more of them than there are on the Mac side, guys. But anyway, so yeah, Windows C, if you have a newfangled laptop with a Copilot key, which controversially is replacing the Write Applications key. So you'll be forced to do Shift F10 or something fancy with key remapping with sharp keys or something. So yeah, you can very easily bring it up. It's basically a browser window and you can read all the contents in there. The main thing you're after is an edit box where you can pop into forms mode or go out of scan mode. And then you can type a question, a prompt as it's called, and hit enter, and then it'll give you the answer and it speaks the answer out to you. And it comes at the bottom of the HTML window, as it were. So if you want to go and find it, you can go to the bottom. And it's nice and accessible. I wouldn't say it was kind of polished from a usability point of view for us screen reader users. But it's basically using ChatGPT 3.5, I think, which is a slightly older version, but a lot cheaper to run. And obviously, this is free for everyone to use. So I think Microsoft are trying to keep down their costs, but I find it really useful. It's supposed to, because this is Windows Copilot, integrate and do some clever things for you in the OS, like turning on dark mode and stuff, but it's very limited in that respect so far. They're talking big and they're saying it's going to be, you know, much more powerful so that you don't have to, you know, go looking in the system settings app. Although that's actually really quite good these days. I would just do a search at the top like I would in most apps, Office apps, for example. Just use that search box at the top and don't even go anywhere near the ribbon. It's supposed to be a lot more powerful in that regard. But the sort of things that we're all using ChatGPT for, generating content, doing web research, it will give you all of the sources that it's gone away and used as a series of buttons that you can find out more information if you want to follow those. I think it's really good. The other co-pilots, I think, have got a lot more potential, but they're not part of Windows. They're kind of tied to the different Microsoft apps, and we could talk about those. But I think anyone that's used ChatGPT or, you know, Gemini, which used to be Bard, or any of the other ones, I think will know what sort of things you could use it for. But over and above that, where it's trying to do things for on your behalf in Windows, it's not any great shakes at the moment, but let's watch that space.
So what are you using it for then at the moment? Are you using this as a sort of replacement? Because right now, if I want to find out anything, straight to the browser, straight to Google, which is my homepage anyway, and yeah, you type in your question, right? So as Copilot replaced Google for you as the first place you go to look something up?
It depends. No is the answer. It depends what you want to do. If you want to just get a summary and you know that you'd go and have to have a look in a number of different websites to find out the answer, because it's like, what are they all saying? What's the landscape when it comes to, you know, AI and its application for people with disabilities, for example? I have to write a blog post on that soon. You know, that's not just one website, is it? That's loads. So just bung that question in Windows Copilot. But I would equally go to, you know, chat.openai.com, for example, or some, you know, other website that has got extra functionality. So I might go to one of those instead. You know, I don't think it's 4 or 4.5, that Windows Copilot. So it's probably not going to give you as good answers. But yeah, I would use it for that sort of thing, not just for kind of finding out a particular website that I would then go to and read that website.
I've got to ask you about I suppose you might say the everyday stuff. The things I hear about, the things that I hear people complain most about, File Explorer, which seems to have kind of taken on a life of its own in terms of the structure. I mean, it used to be quite a simple thing to move around. I mean, we used to make the joke about Apple's Finder, which is the equivalent of File Explorer, of course. And for a lot of people, that was out of reach. And it certainly was for me for many, many years until I kind of figured it out. But it's not easy.
I never did.
No, and it's not easy. It really isn't. And, you know, if you do find it out, it's because you've really worked at it. And you shouldn't have to work as hard as we do.
You didn't work at it, Robin, is what he's suggesting.
Yeah. Yeah. But honestly, you shouldn't have
lightweight.
You shouldn't have to.
I didn't get there. Stephen's obviously a pro.
I never got there either.
I don't understand why you have to hold down about three keys to get to one thing. So, for example, I mean, I love the fact that when you want to get to the applications folder, it's Command Shift A. And if you want to get to, you know, desktop, it's Command Shift D. Okay, that kind of makes sense. But then if you want to go to the downloads folder, it's Command Option L. Okay.
For loads. Yeah.
For loads.
Obviously.
Yeah. I just, well, you know, D's that way. Taken. Yeah, you just think there's some things that don't make a heck of a lot of sense. And, you know, moving around, I mean, although I will say this, and I mentioned it before, and I get a lot of emails from people saying, thank goodness we found this, but window spots now in the new macOS Sonoma, what a difference. It has changed everything for me, just being able to navigate around parts of the screen that I could not access before. So, yeah, really, really improved with window spots. That's the way to move around. But I want to ask you about File Explorer. I want to ask you about Outlook as well, because there's talk of it changing. In fact, I think it has changed, hasn't it, to some kind of web-based view.
There is a version, yeah.
Have you tried that?
No, I haven't. But there is a, you know, rumor that they're going to make people, you know, they're going to replace the normal one. And when that happens, I'm going to retire.
Yeah, that's the best approach, I think.
Now you laugh at that, Stephen. But, I mean, there's a lot of worry.
Yeah,
there's a lot of worry out there about this. Yeah. I mean, we've had emails about, you know, the problems people are having with this web-based move that we're having, Gmail and Outlook. I mean, it is an issue.
Yeah, imagine, I don't know if you guys ever use Gmail in a web page,
no,
in a browser, but that to me would be a nightmare. And I know you had a contributor coming in about that and saying, you know, how challenging the new interface, the updated interface was.
Yeah, she's
I wanted to ask Sean, or I wanted you to ask Sean on that episode, Sean, what do you use for your mail every day in Windows? Because I don't Because the mail,
no.
Because if you're not using Office, the mail client on Windows isn't great. So I could imagine that he is having to go to Gmail on the web because the built-in one isn't great.
Yeah, I use Outlook and whatever comes with Windows when you install it. I don't go off and install Office 365, even though I am a subscriber for some reason, for the rest of the family, I think. So I do use Outlook. I have, for the longest time, I was using Windows Mail. I thought it was fine. I mean, it's not the most advanced email client out there. But I've got to say, on Windows, I think we're slightly struggling for email clients. I mean, I tried Thunderbird for a while. That crashed a lot for me. As you say, Windows Mail can be a little bit annoying to navigate around. And particularly if you're deleting, if you're trying to edit an email you're writing, I found it wouldn't speak out what I was deleting. That was annoying. Outlook, I find a little bit cumbersome, but it is the one I am using by default. And I've got to say, all of the email web pages you go to, for the longest time, I've been with Hotmail or Outlook now for, 25 years or something, and it was always such a pain to navigate. So any web page where there's so many bits of information you're trying to get around, I find a struggle. So I am totally aware of that. And after we got that email from Shazad, I did go to Gmail and take a look. And it's just so much more cumbersome than it needs to be, right, for a screen reader user.
Absolutely, yeah. And the applications mode, which is what JAWS tries to put you into to make a web page, a web application feel like a desktop application, has its drawbacks as well. Teams is another example where it's basically an HTML. It's a web page,
yeah.
But never be in the kind of virtual cursor. Don't treat it as a web page. Treat it as an application. Use Tab and Shift Tab and F6 and stuff like that. And there are quite a few built-in keystrokes for Teams as well. But yeah, they're all moving towards this kind of HTML environment, and it's worrying. It is worrying. Not retiring.
is this partly, do you think, why some people are looking to the Mac and thinking maybe there's some hope over here?
If you do think about it, then have a test drive of it, because boy, I feel like it's got a steeper learning curve and it doesn't feel like it's been built for key to be driven from the keyboard like natively. I feel like there's too much multi-finger, you know, twister
gymnastics.
That game.
Yes.
Yeah. and some weird keystrokes that you've kind of hinted at. It doesn't feel as native a driven experience, and that I always found a little bit disturbing. The, you know, when I'm in Windows and I know all the keystrokes I need, I feel like I'm playing an instrument. I absolutely love it. I feel like I can really rock. And now that I've got a machine that is modern, I mean, the other one was brilliant, but all of the resources were halved because of the VM. So it always felt fine, but this is, you know, no waiting at all. So it really feels like you can just fly, basically, if you know what you're doing. And obviously, I would fully admit I've, you know, had a lot of experience, been using Windows since the 80s,
yeah,
when Windows 3.11.
Wow.
Came out. So a lot's changed, obviously. I would say not for the better, really. But yeah, something like File Explorer, which has now got a kind of an HTML pane in it as well, I would just ignore. So I would never fire up, you know, Windows Explorer necessarily with just Windows key and E. I would, I have on my desktop about 50 odd shortcuts to folders and web shortcuts, etc. So all the web pages I would normally go to, I would just have a hotkey assigned to the shortcut, and it would go straight to that web page. So I wouldn't have to mess around in, you know, going up to the browser bar at the top and putting in the address. Ditto with File Explorer. Every folder I use regularly, I would just do the hotkey and I'd be dropped straight into the list of files and folders. And I don't even use the thing to the left, you know, the folder tree view. I don't use anything else apart from just the main area.
That's the most important. There's only two things you need to worry about in File Explorer. That's the tree view and the item view. That's it. Everything else, you just keep tabbing until you hear tree view or item view.
I mean,
F6, yes. That's right.
If you're going backwards and forwards in the folders, then backspace will take you back a level. So you don't have to kind of go into the folder system for that. And if you've got hotkeys to take you to the folder that you want, then yeah. But I mean, the tree view is fine. The tree view's the same.
That's a cool thing, actually, the fact you can set a shortcut onto a desktop file and it can take you straight to that file or it can take you straight to that application. That's pretty cool. That is pretty cool. You can do all that kind of stuff in the Mac as well, but it's a bit different the way they do it. It's quite specific to the individual item, which I quite like on that. You know, it's funny because we have this conversation about Windows and Mac and we talk back and forward. You mentioned Dolphin earlier, and I think there are other options out there like this, but the one that makes me think for people who are starting out or who want to use a computer but are just finding all of this too much to bear, I think about Dolphin Guide. Mm-hmm. Now, Dolphin Guide is a very simplistic, arguably, layout where you basically work off a list, a very kind of iPhone-like approach to things. And it's just a big list of items. Mm-hmm. You've got email, you've got internet, you've got contacts, you've got, you know, online radio, books, that kind of thing. You can access all of that via a very simple layout. You don't have to go into a Windows operating system or a Mac operating system. You can just live on this screen. And I think for a lot of people who are kind of struggling with Windows and Mac, and you know, they've maybe known Windows, but they're struggling with it. The idea of moving to Mac is just too much to bear. There is that third option. And again, it's good to try these things out. I have to be honest, there have been times where I've felt myself, I could just happily live inside that world. You know, I know exactly where I am. I know exactly what I'm doing. I don't have to worry about the outside world. I can be in my little, you know, internet shed, quite happy.
I mean, it's just like the blind shell. It's like any of those specialist products. It's brilliant in there. Come in, the water's lovely. But as soon as you bump up to the side and you can't do something that you really need to do.
That's the problem, yeah.
Yeah, but no, you're absolutely right. And if your computer has got an infrared sensor like the Mac Mini does, then you can use a remote control with it as well. They supply you with a remote control.
Yeah.
So you can drive it all from this remote and never have to touch the keyboard. And, you know, you can listen to your audiobooks. You can, I mean, I suppose you'd have to use your keyboard to reply to email and stuff like that. But yeah, it's really nice product.
I think people just tend to write it off because it's, and maybe I did as well for years. I just kind of wrote it off because I was thinking, well, it's too simplistic. But actually, for a lot of people, if that's all you need it for, why use anything else? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's good to know the options. Robin, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been really interesting. I'm looking forward to the Surface event later. You should join us for it, and we could catch up on that again at some point. I'll be interested to hear what the hardware announcements are. I mean, it's going to be new laptops and tablets, right? But of course, they're all going to have AI built in, because that's the future.
Hooray!
Everything's got AI built in. AI for you, AI for you, and AI for you. Robin, thank you, as always. Not for you. But Robin, thanks so much for coming back on.
We'll catch you soon. Brilliant.
That's it for today. We will be covering the Surface event tomorrow, so do check out all the news here on Double Tap. And of course, follow us on social for all the latest as well. We'll bring you everything as it comes. And of course, on Access Tech Live as well. You can find that over on AMI TV, also on YouTube and on AMI Plus. That is it for today, though. Sean Preece, as always, thank you.
Thank you, and bye-bye.
Join us weekly for The Pulse with host Juita Gupta, who brings us closer to issues impacting the disability community across Canada. Watch The Pulse on YouTube or listen wherever you download your AMI podcasts.